bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the big show, making it up as we go along. Had a few issues, of course, but it's Thursday night. What do you expect? I've turned everything off and back on again. Ian Grant to be proud. We're here to discuss the week's news in technology. And I've got a great panel, as ever, the wonderful, wonderful foursome of top left, James Hart. How are you doing, sir?
Good evening, Ewan. I had today off. Tough day, despite that. Yes, you had a tough day. I hate having my hair cut. Absolutely hated it, but it was starting to get completely unruly. So I took my boy to get our hairs cut, and because every time I get my hair cut, it seems to go back a little bit. I don't know whether the barber just cuts more off, but it just goes back a bit further every time.
Well, you've got to say, mate, it's hardly a marathon, is it? Your haircut?
No. How can you not like going to the barbers? Is his name Sweeney Todd or something?
Absolutely, yes. It's when he gets close to me next. I start worrying.
Yeah.
Coming from the back of the pack there to jump the queue, it's Sarah Gray. How you doing, girl?
You caught me with a mouth. I thought he was going to go to Paul first.
That's your fault.
Apologies for not making it last week and letting everyone down at last minute and blooming work issues. But
Foxy stepped
all in sorted now, so hopefully won't be any more interruptions to the regular service.
No, Foxy stepped in admirably, so don't worry, it's fine.
Yeah, it's good.
Next to Sarah, we've got Paul Wheatley. How you doing, mate?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, all right. Decent bandwidth tonight, by the looks. Have you drugged the village?
I went out with a set of snips and cut everybody's telephone cables down, so it was just me. But no, it seems to be okay tonight.
He's had fibre pumped in.
I reckon what he's done, he's paid everybody to go down the pub and enjoy themselves so he can use the band.
Got him pished last night. And last, but by no means least, on a beautifully crystal clear connection, all the way from sunny California, Eric Lanigan.
Hello. I'm disappointed. I kind of wish Alex could have announced the Mac voice on Skype. I like that now. I never heard that
You'll
before.
You'll never hear it calling you Eric Lanigan. You'd never hear that, would you?
I would never hear that.
It would be deaf. You would be unknown.
You should get Brian Blessed to do it.
Calling Eric Lanigan!
That's not bad, actually. Not quite deep enough.
We'll get it. Brian Blessed's a listener, so we'll get him to do us some voiceovers. There we go.
That would be cool. Intros.
I'm lying, Sarah. I have no idea. Why would Brian Blessed listen to this crap?
It's going to be this kind of show, isn't it?
So, the week in technology. It's been a big week for Twitter. The court has ruled that the Twitter bomber has gone free, and no doubt will sue the government now for his losses. And also, there's a few Twitter jobs around going on about a journalist and for, is it NBC? And also a thing for Tom Daley as well, the Olympic diving star who came fourth. Bad luck. And also, the Olympics are in the news themselves because of things like Wi-Fi hotspots, and also they've changed the rules on cameras and that kind of stuff. We'll probably talk a bit about that more tomorrow in the photo show. And Rim, the CEO for Rim, looks like he's for the high jump. He's not doing so well, but he said, no, BBS10, perfect. Not an issue. Nothing. Not a problem. BB10 even. Can't even remember the name. There you go. So bad it is.
And we've also got some breaking news from Facebook as well.
We have.
Two stories, one from the chat room and one from Sarah Jane earlier. Sorry.
If you bought
I've got
shares
in trouble for calling her Sarah Jane.
If you bought shares in Facebook, well.
If you bought shares in Facebook, you should have listened to me.
No, it was always going to be that. Let's start off with Twitter then, shall we? So the first one is the Paul Chambers was the guy that tweeted out that he wanted to bomb Robin Hood Airport when it was siloed up thanks to the unpronounceable volcano in Iceland. And someone picked up on it weeks later and the police got involved. It went to Doncaster magistrates. He got a fine and a suspended sentence, I think £2,000 or something stupid. And he's gone to appeals now. It's gone all the way to the appeal court and it's been thrown out. So the voice of reason speaks, or have we just wasted the public's money yet again?
I think we know the answer to that one, don't we?
Well, that's all right. Let's keep the show short then.
Well, have we though? I mean, On one hand, yeah, okay, it was a joke and things like that. But on the other hand, it could have been a legitimate threat. And if somebody somewhere had just kind of heard about it and went, ah, you know, who cares? It's just somebody having a laugh. And then it did get blown up. You know, everybody would have been attacking them to say, you should have known you had a chance at this. You did something here.
I'm going to... Go on, sir.
No, I was just going to say, the thing is, Paul, if you were going to do that, would you really do that? Would you talk about it on Twitter?
Why do bombers and things like that phone up before their intended target? It's to cause panic and terror.
Yeah, the intention of a terrorist is to cause terror.
Yeah, but if you're gonna do that, you do it just before you go and do it. So there's nobody a chance to do anything about it. Almost someone's like, I can say, well, I told you I was going to do it. But not to, you know, hey, nothing happened for 12 hours, 24 hours afterwards. It should have been fairly obvious it wasn't real.
Give
the guy a warning, that's about it.
It was a Jobsworth who picked it up, who probably got mentioned. It's the old Daily Mail thing where somebody tells somebody else who tells somebody else who just goes, they did what? And then it all blows up from there, from somebody who's got far too much time on their hands or wants to prove themselves to be effective in their job by sort of picking up on these little details. It's the old you can't park there type of thing, isn't it?
Well, I think the one thing to look for, first of all, is he did say Robin Airport is closed again. I'm going to blow it up because I'm sick and tired of it, which is clearly a frustrated statement, and they've taken that out of context. But the other thing, and this is where Eric can really join in, because I would suggest that you guys have got freedom of speech, and we kind of have, but it's you struggle to say whether it's actually can be exercised here in the UK. All the comedians and all the newspapers and that kind of stuff are saying it's censorship, it's avoidance of freedom of speech. But there's a big difference between freedom of speech and threatening behaviour, even in the US, Eric?
I guess. I'm a little embarrassed now because I hadn't been following the story. I'm not really sure what was going on.
Okay.
This is going to be a short show.
But from an American context, though, Eric, have there been any similar stories where the number of people who use Twitter in America, surely there is somebody who's been picked up for behaving, not necessarily in a threatening way to a person, but with the sensitivity to terrorist activities and things. I'm really surprised that this hasn't been picked up already and somebody being prosecuted for it. Or is it the Freedom of Speech Act that allows the Fifth Amendment, whichever amendment.
No. In fact, I think that's
people to be able to say what they like.
No, in fact, I think that's what threw me off there. It's because I think we have a lot here. We've got people who make just a joke. I think this sounds so familiar. I think there must have been just a recent story recently where there was like a harmless joke made on Twitter and people thought it was actually some kind of a threat. Does anyone remember that? It was like some kind of.
I remember that. It was a couple from Britain were coming into America.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They both put out, they were quotes from Family Guy, the TV show. One was about digging up Marilyn Monroe and the other one was about destroying America, but meaning in the I'm going out to get drunk kind of sense. Yeah. They both got essentially turned around at the front door and sent back to Britain.
Thank you, Paul. That was exactly what I was thinking of. You have the perfect memory. there's that. So no, to answer your question, I think as far as freedom of speech, we take non-threats a little too seriously too. I think we take things that are obviously jokes like that. That happens a lot. I mean, I've heard since I was a little kid, but way before any of the actual terrorist stuff, that, you know, if you even joke about a bomb or something anywhere near an airport, they'll throw you off immediately, and it's to a silly extent.
Yeah, I mean, let's again look at the next story, which is Tom Daley, Olympic diver. He lost his father last year to a brain tumour, and some arse tweeted out that when he came fourth in the synchronised driving with his partner, he'd let his memory of his father down, and he was a complete waster and other bad things like that. And this sparked a huge uproar on Twitter with people sending threats and that kind of stuff to this guy. And then all of a sudden the police arrest him. And you're kind of thinking, well, hang on, that means Tom Daley's got his own private police force. You can't say anything on Twitter that's defamatory or you know, I don't like you, I think you're stupid, without getting the police involved. But what everyone's overlooked is that the Twitter string from the guy, Riley something or other...
Oh, he's an absolute arse, isn't he?
Well, yeah, but he'd actually threatened to stab one person who was giving him significant abuse, and he said, I'm going to come round there and stab you repeatedly, and And that's what the police got involved for, which I don't have a problem with. I really don't.
Yeah, because that even if he's got no intention of doing it, that's intimidation, isn't it?
But the thing is, like, why would you write something like that?
That was the kind of this is the thing I think that people have missed, is that was his style before he did that. He was a definitive troll who goes around causing trouble, just annoying the hell out of everybody and threatening people. But it's only when a celebrity who everybody's behind. I mean, a lot of this, unfortunately, Twitter has got a lot of this going on. It is a place where bullying happens. It's a real shame. But it's only when somebody who is in the public eye gets affected by it, then they take a look at the back catalogue and go, what the hell has this guy been doing? And it exposes him. It's frightening that the people like that can be. There's no other way to call them out on it. I think there's a big problem.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So if you're a troll, just stay away from the celebs and you'll be fine.
No, I think that's one thing I'd really clearly draw a distinction here. There's no suspicion at all in this story. If you read what the police have done and said, that they arrested this guy or pursued this on the original comment to Tom Daley. They've pursued it on the stuff that followed afterwards.
Okay.
And talking about drowning someone and stabbing them repeatedly was used. Now, that's I had a death threat last year from some idiot who rang up from a place that was blatantly trolling me for have you made a claim for a car accident I had 3 years back. And I just got to the point where I've had so much of it. You know, I've had two calls a week for 3 years from people asking me. And I said, oh, will you piss off? And I put the phone down. Guy comes back and says he knows where I live, he knows who I am, he reads my name out, he reads my address out, he's going to come around and stab all of my family. And I went straight down to police. Now, I know who he was. He said the name of his firm before he started. Some very kind people on Twitter helped me find the address and phone number of the company that's the parent company. And I made a formal complaint to the police. And rightly I should have, I think. And hopefully something's happened to him. But
that's pretty crazy. That was a phone solicitor turned death threat?
Yeah, he's just an idiot who was getting paid to ring up and say, do you realise you could make a claim? And I just had enough of it. And I shouldn't have told him to piss off, but I did. And he took umbrage because I was probably the 50th person that day to tell him to piss off in the 2 hours he'd been working. So,
my point, I believe, still stands that people are abusive to people on other people on Twitter, in a public forum with published material. But what is happening when people type stuff into Twitter that is displayed publicly? It is published, but because there is so much of it, and often people don't know how to deal with it, it's only when a celeb gets involved and then they continue their existing behavior. Because like I said, I think he had form of being abusive to people. He would be threatening to people. I don't think he'd just start doing it. Like, for example, you and I don't think you were the first person the guy on the phone issued a death threat to, but you were maybe the first person who actually called the police.
I didn't take it seriously. I think the one thing that is probably not the popular thing to do, because you look for a story, you want to make a story out of something. I think the police have acted exactly properly there. They've arrested the guy based on a comment which really was a genuine threat to another person, even if he couldn't have found him, etc. That's not the point. And I think this case has shown that you can go around and you control people and you can call them arses on the net. And if you get abused back for doing it, you'd be protected from death threats from it, but you won't be protected from people calling you an arse. And I get two emails a week calling me names. I'm not going to be sending them on to the police.
Yeah, half of them from me.
Yeah, no, you did slip up that once.
But I think it's a bigger thing that I don't think people quite know how to deal with this kind of stuff yet. You know, if somebody kind of comes up to you in a pub or in a shop or something like that and is directly abusive to your face, you kind of know how to deal with that, or maybe most people do and some people don't. But on the web, I think it's a totally different thing, and it's not a new thing with Twitter. I think Twitter and all this following celebrities has kind of made it bigger and it's made it more in the public eye. But it's always been there in forums and news groups and everything like that for years.
Right. I mean, if I'd have taken issue with everybody who called me fat and ugly on a rugby field, the courts would be full.
I think the only area where there has been any real effort to sort it out is within schools, when you get bullying going on between kids forums, on BBM, on this and that on the internet. And there has been some real efforts to try and deal with it from that point of view, but not for the rest of us.
I don't know. I mean, there was a campaign that Lothian and Borders Police did very, very recently. In fact, it may even still be live. And they were talking about the fact that, you know, if you're bullied or something like that on social networking sites, it was a whole thing about computers and keeping your password safe and everything like that. But at the end of the advert on the radio, it said, if you're getting bullied on a social networking site, just shut down your computer and never go to that site again. And I just thought, that's insane. They have absolutely no idea how this
run
works.
Run and hide! Run and hide!
Kids aren't going to do that. It's like saying to kids, well, don't go to school if you're getting bullied. No, that's not the way to deal with it. And I think it's just the problem is nobody really knows how to deal with it.
Just stop texting. Just stop making phone calls. Why leave your house ever?
Shut the door. Wear a tin hat.
Absolutely. No,
run away!
No, but in all seriousness, there is something, you know, switch off the phone type thing.
Last Twitter story that we're going to do, we're not going to go on for it too long. Guy Adams, Independence Los Angeles correspondent, posted a series of tweets that pilloried the network's delayed coverage for, was it NBC?
Indeed.
Yeah, and they took umbrage, contacted Twitter. Twitter suspended his account. And I haven't read all of this particularly closely, but it sounds horrific. Is that the essence of it, or have I skirted around
that
a bit quickly?
Go on, James. I'm happy to tell the story because it was interesting because I know a number of people in America, and they were really peed off with NBC's coverage because of the choices they made in what was edited, including a number of things, including the sort of the memorial of the people who died and couldn't make it there. What happened is this guy wrote some tweets, and one of them said, if you want to complain to this guy, here's his business email address, because he's the guy who made the decisions. Consequently, Twitter had been working with NBC and been looking at the sort of the tweets about the whole thing, contacted somebody in Twitter mistakenly, because they shouldn't do this, contacted NBC and goes, do you know somebody's just put an email address onto your thing, and you might want to take action about that. Raise a complaint. NBC raised a complaint with Twitter's complaints department. Twitter's complaints department said, you can't do that. Block the account. It came out eventually that rather than NBC raising a complaint based on somebody witnessing it themselves, the fact that Twitter actually proactively came up with the grievance and sort of prompted NBC to carry out to raise a complaint was the issue, was what they did wrong. So they wrote out a press release to say, sorry, we shouldn't have done that. We shouldn't have started checking tweets to find out, to policing tweets ourselves and sort of nudging NBC to let you say, you might not want to look at that, because it's not their job to do that. What he exposes, however, is the links between something which one would normally consider to be an open, impartial, free public site, and then realizes that these lines of communication that carry on in the background, which can actually affect people who use the site without their knowledge. And this is something that I think Twitter have tried to very quickly to defend themselves, well, not defend themselves against, but say, we're not going to do this. This isn't our custom and practice, because if they did, nobody would trust Twitter anymore. Mm. Yeah. They'd think that the Twitter police were kind of watching everything everyone was doing.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts, Eric?
No.
Okay.
I mean, the big problem was, you see, it took someone like this guy, the reporter, Guy Adams, a while to track back. How did you hear about this? And then somebody in NBC said, well, Twitter told us to do it. You did what? So it was the fact that you had to be a journalist. It was a journalist who tracked it back, told everybody, as soon as people, the thing about, I think he was probably working for The Guardian, and the number of people on Twitter who follow The Guardian will stand up and wave flags in their kind of their liberalistic, wet way. I'm a Guardian reader myself, so
I think one of
to support the freedom of speech. And of course, as soon as anything like this starts happening, as soon as there's a kind of a groundswell of protest about it, everybody starts taking notice. And of course, then the papers print it, and you end up with this rather nasty mess that turns into the Leveson Inquiry if you're not careful.
I think the one thing that bothers me about this kind of stuff, and I've heard a couple of stories in the last couple of weeks about the banking business doing this with suspicion of laundering money. So there's no appeals process. There's no formal right of saying, right, I've been charged with this. Here's a declaration that you've been taken down, rather than you just suddenly can't access your account. And then you raise your hand and say, well, I'd like to appeal, please, and here's why. None of that exists with this process. It's just arbitrary. It's just removal. It's like, you know, a lot of the media organisations at the Olympics has got a backdoor into YouTube, which anything at all that comes up, the thing with the salutes the Nazi salutes from the opening ceremony and from the, I think it was the Polish guy at the basketball. All of that has just been instantly taken down via a backdoor by the Olympic Committee. And there's no appeals process. There's nothing there to kind of reconstitute. And there was a horrific story in the newspaper about a lad who'd been accused of money laundering. They shut his account down, kept all his money, and they gave him no appeals process. Which, as far as to my mind, if they're keeping your money, that's theft. You should have called the police.
But there was, I mean, there is a degree of an appeals process because this chap managed to get his account activated again.
Yeah.
I mean, he's back up and running again. So, but I appreciate there's not a formal appeals process. I mean, he had a bit of weight, so he was able to do something about it.
Yeah, well, you need this, you know, if you've taken me down, we've taken your account down. If you don't like this idea, here's how you appeal. And, you know,
this is the big problem with a this is a big problem with a homogenized service, isn't it? Is that when you have millions, if not billions, of interfaces every day, and some of them are automatically harvested as being inappropriate, most of them probably are. But if your one isn't, there is it's an 80-20 rule. That 20% of people that are causing trouble is going to take a huge amount of resources to be able to address each and every one. And therefore, a lot of the times, the doors. I mean, have you tried to get your? I've been chucked off Facebook before. To get your Facebook account reignited or whatever it is a right old bastard to do, because you end up having to email someone who barely can type English.
Reignite. I want to reignite Facebook. If I tweeted that, I'd be arrested, wouldn't I?
Absolutely.
Well, it could be construed in such a way.
The Olympics, the flaming pyre. Talking about flaming pyres, the Olympic committee are a bit upset. They've taken out an awful lot of stuff about Wi-Fi being banned in all of the local, all of the event locations. And they've also issued a, please stop using Twitter because you're and tweets and social media because you're wrecking the phone coverage in London.
See, I find this story ridiculous. Did they not see this coming? You know, I mean, but you know, who kind of thought this? But I actually think there's a wee bit extra to this story. Is there not the chance that this isn't just tweets and things like that? Because I find it hard to believe that there's enough tweets when you think about the size of a tweet file going up and then enough photos going up. Is it not possible that people are actually like streaming the audio of the commentator so they can actually hear what's going on at the side of the track?
Oh, that's a good thought, yes.
Well, the other thing is, what's quite interesting is the fact that a comment was made by someone who's been watching a lot of the events, is if you're in the venue, all you get to see is the event you're watching, because there are so many other, you know, if there's a massive cycle race going on up Hampton Courtway and old Mutton Chops is winning, you don't know about it, and therefore people are constantly using the data connections on their phones to keep track of everything else that's going on, because there is no other information. Mm. Unfortunately, what the guys have had to do is, because you've got your 3G connection, if you want to share your 3G connection using kind of either tethering or a MiFi, they've got these little weapons now that they sort of scoot around and try and suck up all your Wi-Fi connections to find out who's doing it. The reason for that is because there is so much back channel communication. There is so much need for communication for NAS headsets, data, community, you know, everything. Not everything is done over the wires. They're really struggling to retain the spectrum for it.
The Olympics is like a totalitarian regime that we just welcome into our countries, man, every 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. It's really crazy, the stuff we're talking about.
It is Naziistic. There's no question of it. And have you noticed Israel never wins any medals? Huh?
It's like a world's fair where you get to just experience totalitarian regimes for a few weeks.
Yeah, and the worst thing of all, guys, it is the London 2012 Olympics, and what happened on Friday night at the opening ceremony? Everything was in bloody French first.
You wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
We were watching it, I have to say, and we got to the bit where we'd watched it the following morning. And because we'd fallen asleep about Grenada, I think, or something like that.
I think that's when I joined it.
And we're off. We finished Seb Coe's speech. We're like, well done, Seb. And then Jack Roger comes up and I said, oh, the last thing we need's a Belgian. So I fast-forwarded it. But it is. It's a totalitarian regime. You're absolutely right. You can't. And the other thing that I pointed out last night, I was sitting with Steve Neighbour watching some highlights. And I said to him, have you noticed there's no advertising boards? There's lots of people playing fortunes to be affiliated with the Olympics, but there's no advertising. You can't. Panasonic provide the board for the timings and for the announcement of the swimmers when they come out, and there's a little bit of Panasonic on the bottom of that, and that's it. There was nothing else. You only get to say you're affiliated with, you're the official sponsor of, but you get no advertising at any of the venues.
So I saw an interesting poll around that, and it was about who was like the kit sponsor for the majority of the games. Was it Adidas or Nike? And it turns out that it's Adidas. I didn't know that, but the majority of people thought it was Nike, and there wasn't really any explanation around that. It was just that it had that little an impact that everybody just automatically assumed it was Nike that was the kind of the main sponsor.
I mean, do you think Nike? How sponsorships change?
Sorry, how do you pronounce that? I forgot. There's a different way.
Nike.
Yeah, Nike. Sorry.
Nike.
I'd never heard that before.
I went to a dinner with Jeff Hurst a couple of years ago, and he was saying you used to get you'd be in a hotel room waiting to play for England, and you get a boy will come around and knock on your hotel door, and he'll be there with a bucket of white paint, and he'll give you 75 quid. I'm going back, 40 years. And he said, you give you 75 quid, and he'd paint three white stripes on your boots, and that night you were sponsored by Adidas. And he said, you'd wake up the next morning, you'd wash them off for the next game. That was sponsorship.
Lord. Yeah, what's it? I was just seeing Windwide in the chat room. What's with the headphones? Why is everybody wearing, the swimmers come in wearing headphones? Is that because they've got, they've got Dr. Dre's beats on and they listen to a bit of dubstep before they start swimming?
They can't wear anything, can
they? Are they sponsored?
They can't wear anything. So they're not allowed to wear anything that shows any corporate logos, any manufacturing logos, nothing at all. They have to do something. The only thing they're allowed to do is wear headphones in. And Dr. Dre, he must be raking it in. All those beats. Go, buy me. Are they any good as headphones as well?
They're great for the rap you music.
Say again, Eric.
I've heard mixed reviews. I've heard that they're very heavy on the bass, but the depending on the kind of music you listen to, you may not like the rest of the frequency response.
I'd have expected you to own a pair, Eric, and have done a full review on it. You are Mr. I mean, you're the one that bought a Bluetooth audio set, and because it wasn't as good as Bose, sent it back. I mean,
wait, I didn't get a Bluetooth.
You got a Bluetooth headset, didn't you? When you sent it back, you said, I thought it was really light on the top end, and... No,
that sounds familiar, but I think that was a while ago.
Yeah,
I got the microphone that I didn't like.
That was like a year ago. It's fine.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. BB10 has been released, so we've got a bit to talk about with them in a minute. But Android has managed to get saturation of ice cream sandwich up to 16%. What I can't get over is this is like a story where it's like, see, we've got 16%. What?
Well, we all know why this really is, don't we?
But this is what's killing Android as a platform.
Yeah, I know. It's the mobile providers because they've tainted the OS on the version of Android on the mobiles. It's ruined the upgrade path.
Yeah.
Hold on. I just want to. I mean, I'm a massive Apple fanboy, but Ewan, I don't think we could say killing Android.
Well,
I don't think there's any evidence to say that Android's been killed.
Paul, I think Ewan's got a point. I mean, the stats kind of actually prove that point. We should have ice cream sandwich on a lot more phones now. And the only reason it isn't is because there's no upgrade path because the mobile providers have tainted the operating system on the phones that they're providing.
By the way, it was the Motorola pair that I had. I remember now.
Motorola, that's right. And I had a pair and I liked them. So.
Unless you've got...
I had them for like a day. So.
Go on, Sarah.
Back on the bloody Bluetooth.
Unless you've got a Galaxy S3 or something, like Galaxy Note or whatever, you're not going to have the most up to date operating system. That's totally down to mobile providers.
I'm going to add to this to say that there are devices, older iPhones, that cannot have iOS 5 on them, and so it's exactly the same thing. It's just the fact that people are willing continually upgrade their iPhones to the 4 and the 4S that can take the latest version of the operating system. My kids have got iPod Touches, second gens, that won't run half of the games on the market because the operating system is incompatible with it. So it's exactly the same thing, really. It's just the fact that, there is no upgrade path for, there is no software upgrade path or operating system upgrade path for Apple either. It'd be interesting.
James, can I just, as obviously I'm not an iPhone user, I wouldn't know the answer to this, but do the mobile providers taint the operating system on an iPhone in the same way that they do on Android?
Not at all.
They don't.
So presumably because Apple don't let them do it.
But if you go to the Android store and you've got something running 3.2 or 4.1 or possibly even that Jelly Bean thing, you will still be able to play Angry Birds. You will still be able to play almost everything in the marketplace because it has been written for Android. I understand it. I may be shot down in flames for that one.
But is it not, there's another element to that, that how many Android users actually are even aware that they've got an Android and they're just quite happy with the operating system that's on there. It's a phone, it makes calls, I can text my mum, I'm done. You know, iOS users generally, well, maybe this is a big generalization, but iOS users are more into the hardware. They bought an iPhone to have an iPhone as opposed to a large percentage of the Android market that's just got a phone because it works.
I mean, how important is the branding of Android for the sales?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, there's a story at AT&T, staffer actively being told not to push the iPhone in the stores. They're pushing Android phones far more than iPhone. And Android sales, you know, there's some ridiculous, like 500,000 a day or 500,000 a week that they're activating. That's a vast number in comparison to iPhone. But how many of those people are buying it because they know that they're buying an Android phone as opposed to they're buying a Galaxy S3 and it does this because they saw their mates do it down the pub? So it's not engagement in the brand of Android. It's just a case of features are shown in the pub, so someone says, I have to have it. And if they stood there with a Motorola Flip or whatever running 2.33, then they're going to stand there and go, oh, it's just because my phone's old. It's not because my provider doesn't give a toss and hasn't upgraded the OS.
Yeah,
they don't understand that the OS does upgrade.
Yeah, I think that's the point. I think for a lot of people, it's because I mean, let's face it. When we just had phones that were phones like the Nokia, whatever. You know, that's how we thought of it too. We thought, oh, in order to upgrade this, we've actually got to upgrade the phone.
Mm.
Uh-huh. So I think that perception has
and you generally
persisted.
Did you know from yeah. from Windows 8 or Windows 6 to Windows 6.5 was a hardware change, not a software change.
I mean, really, the only phone you've ever been able to upgrade the software and carry the phone software forward has been the iPhone. It's really been an anomaly if you look at it that way.
Totally,
except for the iPhone 3, which you can't put 5 on.
Well, yeah, but there was a stoppage, wasn't there? It stopped at a certain threshold or a certain point.
I meant to ask, James, what's the procedure for, you said your kids download games sometimes that aren't, they don't run on the older iPod Touches.
It just says, this is not compatible. They click the install button. It says, this is not compatible with your version of the operating system.
Oh, with the operating system. So it's not because of the hardware.
No, it's because of the operating system can't go above, I think, 4.1. And because it, 4.0. And because it won't go above 4.0, you can't upgrade the operating system above it. It can't use the facilities the operating system gives.
There's quite a lot of games that I purchased when I initially bought iPhone that won't play on the later OSs either.
That's an interesting way to do it. Because when you first said that, I was going to say, well, I'm a little surprised that Apple is doing that now. Because the last I heard, you know, they required that any piece of software run on any hardware device. So I guess instead of phasing out and saying that your iPhone is obsolete, they blame it on the software, which is kind of interesting from a marketing perspective.
Because what happens is the software, you see the new version of the software. In fact, a new version of the software will be released that says now compatible with iOS 5, and it will make it incompatible with the version they already have. And software has stopped working, and that was really frustrating for the kids.
But I guess that makes sense. I mean, if you're going to do that, if you have to obsolete your hardware in some way, I guess it's easier for the consumer if you use the number, like saying it requires iOS version 4 instead of 5 or something, rather than saying, especially due to Apple's naming convention, rather than saying requires the second generation, third generation, fourth generation, and you're like, well, I don't know what I have. It's not printed on the device. There's no identifying label on the back. They just call it the iPod. They just call it the iPhone or the iPad. So it's an interesting approach. Instead of just saying that this particular hardware model is done with or is not supported by the new games or new software, they blame the version of the OS. I haven't seen that before, I guess.
What balks me, I guess, is the fact that this piece of hardware, the battery still charges, it still runs for a reasonable length of time, it still plays music, but you can't do what you used to be able to do on it. I don't believe the lifetime of the product has been expired yet. but already people are expecting it not to be able to do what it used to do. That just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah.
What year did you buy it?
Well, funnily enough, my daughter's one went wrong and they did a like-for-like replacement last year.
Hmm. Alex in the chat room is making a good point. He's saying majority of these hardware failures are to do with graphics compatibility, not with hardware ability or software basic ability. It's to do with the fact that what renders the graphics just changes too much, and that's to be honest, that's what's happened.
And it would run like a dog.
That I've had. It's obviously been jerky graphics that have been the problem. The things played, but you couldn't respond to it. You couldn't hit the ball or whatever because the ball was traveling microscopically slow. And you couldn't time the swing or anything like that. And that's where it's fallen down. So, yeah, it's graphics, I think, more than anything else.
By the way, shout out to SF Drummer, who just mentioned, he says, I still got Tris that runs on iOS 6. So do I. Well, I didn't have iOS 6, I guess. I have the iPhone 4. But that is the best Tetris clone ever made for iOS. I still have it. They pulled it, like, right after it came out. I still have it. It still carries forward. So I guess whatever that developer did was right, because they haven't been able to update it since. So it's a good thing they haven't had to.
No, I need to find out how to get hold of Tris, an illegal copy. BBM, it's called BB10, has come out, and old Torsten has said... No, it's all fine. We're right there. We're going to make redundancies. We're going to sell the plane. However, BB10's going to save us.
Except it doesn't run on anything yet.
Yeah. And didn't you say you saw a playbook for 89 quid or something?
Yeah, that's never going to get 10.
When you hit the £89 mark, you know that's right there with the WebOS tablet. And you're on the way out.
Yeah. Now.
I know BlackBerry have got the enterprise market and still have. I mean, I've been at a firm this week and the whole company is walking around with two BlackBerries. One's picking up email, the other one's for making calls on. And every exec's walking around with two of them. So, you know, and they're ditched, but they're still functioning. They're broken and smashed and scratched, but they're still functioning.
You know, I think they're all changing
hardware.
Here.
Sorry?
In some industries, maybe. Carry on.
I was just going to say, I think that is changing, Ewan.
Well, there's more not wearing BB.
I definitely think that is the model is changing. Yeah, I know BlackBerries. I mean, we've still got to use BlackBerries at work, but iPhones are actually starting to take over from BlackBerries.
I think it's some industries, though, but I work in financial sector and everybody in the building is walking around with one BlackBerry and one smartphone, be it Android or iOS. Because they have to use the BlackBerry for work. There's no way out of it. Mind you, we're also using Windows XP as well. But I think this... I actually like the look of this new BlackBerry phone. I think it's quite interesting. I think it's got some potential. It's kind of looking like a really nice mix.
Occurred to me. Anyone think there's any chance BlackBerry could offer a BBM application? Like offer whatever last remaining exclusive features they have that people say that they can't live without, offer it as like an application that you can buy for Android and iOS, but then charge like a super high monthly subscription rate for it or something.
Never going to happen.
I think it's the security it comes down to. And that's the main reason that the BlackBerries are still getting used in the financial sector.
I think it is security. I think you're right. But I also think that Sarbanes-Oxley is one of BlackBerry's best friends. Because the problem is, Sarbanes-Oxley starts saying, corporate control ethic within Sarbanes-Oxley starts saying that you can't send emails from personal accounts because they're not traceable for Sarbanes-Oxley if they do an inspection. So if they find any emails that have come from outside of the corporate network, then they start to clamp down because that's the way people can filter out and start to do fraud through the back door. And that's the beauty of BlackBerry, because BlackBerry integrates with your current system, whereas things like iPhones, Samsung Galaxy is a bit of a rigmarole to do it, and it's an easy path for compliance with Sarbanes-Oxley. If Sarbanes-Oxley gets changed and it disappears for that aspect, or other devices get into that and get the same level of control of email, I think then you're going to say goodbye to RIM.
Now that's a really good point.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that's a really good point, that it does have to do a lot with accounting record keeping requirements, that it all has to be able to funnel through the individual company's server or their backup system or something for archiving any communication that's sent or monitoring if it's something like in the financial industry or something. But I mean, that brings up an interesting point that if accounting purposes at really big companies like that is the reason that they have BlackBerries, why have Apple, Microsoft, and Google have their operating systems out there now for so long and have not built in that capability? You'd think that if they just allowed that last bit of Sarbanes-Oxley record-keeping compliance to work on their devices like an iPhone, you'd think that that would open up a huge market of corporate enterprise rollouts at major, major enterprise and firms.
Mm. That's already started happening where I work. I mean, iPhone has got an acceptable amount of security associated with his email client. It's got Exchange. It's integrated with Exchange. Everything that's sent on it is tracked through the Exchange servers. It's interesting the point that Paul made, and I can't. I thought I could reconcile it when Ewan said Sarbanes-Oxley will make sure that all email communications go through one central system. The whole carrying two phones, a work phone and a personal phone. The only reason most people do that is because they've got their work phone on one and their personal email on another. If BlackBerry were to make a device that people would be happy to use as their day-to-day phone as well as a work phone, would they ever subsume a smartphone as well? I don't think it ever will. I think that the corporate thing will always be straight down the middle. I don't. Yeah. How many phones? Have you got a work phone and a personal phone, Sarah?
No.
So which one have you got? Have you got a work phone?
It's a personal one, and I use it for work.
Yeah, but you see, this is the point. That is exactly why I think Sarbanes-Oxley is the overriding factor and what would be the saviour of BlackBerry is the fact that anyone that you talk to, if you say to them, are you bothered about BlackBerry? The ones that say, no, I think it's changed, I think BlackBerry's dead, are the ones that don't work in organisations that have tie-in to the US to that level of corporate financing and control. Right. So if you look around the panel here, Here's the interesting point. Sarah works from a purely European-based organization that has no interest at all in interfacing at a financial level with the US. Therefore, she gives the answer. BlackBerry, you know, I don't think it's that way at all. I think people are diversifying from BlackBerry. Well, that's because she can. And if you go to Paul, Paul's going to say, I don't think that's the case because BlackBerry is important because he's in the financial markets, and the financial markets are very heavily tied into Sarbanes-Oxley and the US. You talk to Ian Grant. Again, his company is very, very heavily tied into the Sarbanes-Oxley process. And you talk about the BBC don't care because the BBC produce content that people want to consume in the States, so they don't give a toss about the financial constraints of Sarbanes-Oxley. Mm-hmm. They couldn't care less. You don't like it, fine.
As long as it's secure.
And we'll take our content with us as long as it's secure. So that's why you give the answer, James. I don't think it's that bad. It's definitely, right. What I've spotted in talking to people about BlackBerry is that it's always about tied in with financial constraints within the US. And if you're not financially responsible in the US, then you don't give a toss about BlackBerry. And that's
now, John C. Dvorak has spoken, John Dvorak has spoken very often about Sarbanes-Oxley and the fact it is so entrenched into business in the US. And I think it's because it offers not just protection, but also kind of like a regulation. Would there ever be an appetite to change that?
Well,
I don't think they would.
I don't think they will because they're too scared of having another Enron.
Yes.
No, they are. That's it. I mean, Sarbanes-Oxley is all about Enron catching people with their pants down. You've now got, what was the bank that Lehman Brothers going out and other banks now that have got problems with fraudulent transactions and money laundering. The press for Sarbanes-Oxley has never been stronger than it currently is within the financial markets. So I could see BlackBerry sitting there going, as long as Sox is around, we'll be making phones and they'll be buying them.
But the new operating system actually has a bit of a nice look about it. It looks like a Windows operating system. Mm. So what if, just as a bit of a punt here, what if they actually managed to make the operating system nice enough that the majority of people who are currently in that position where they're having to carry two phones are kind of going, well, you know what? This new operating system's got everything I need. It's got Angry Birds. It goes back to that thing. We won't choose an iPhone over Android and things like that. And it does everything I want. And it almost gets a bit of a second life. And then there's also the teenage market that's coming through that are heavily, heavily tied into BlackBerries. My 14-year-old stepdaughter, she's got an iPhone because, frankly, I make her have an iPhone. And all of her friends are on BlackBerries, and they can't understand why on earth she would want an iPhone because BlackBerries are the way to go.
Some company should make the Sarbanes-Oxley Superphone. It's like a big brick device with an internal battery down the center that adds to both phones. And on one side is the iPhone, and on the absolute other side, you flip it over, is your BlackBerry. And it's all contained in one big plastic brick that also doubles as a second battery.
Dude.
And you can keep it in like a pocket and then hold it up, and everyone will think you're using a 1980s Motorola StarTAC.
I forgot.
And that'll be kitsch for a while.
I've got Torsten here on the phone, Eric. He wants to know if you want a jet and if you want a place on the board. The Sox phone. There we go. It won't win anything for 30 years, though. Ooh. That was for Sarah, by the way.
Don't go there.
This podcast and all the others is sponsored by UK2. They're brilliant. They're absolutely awesome. I've bought some websites through them today or to this week. And they're awesome. They're wonderful. Dead easy. 20% off domains. Takes it down to less than a fiver if you want to buy a .co.uk for 2 years. And less than a fiver again if you want a .com for a year. So it's really competitive prices with the codes that we've got. VPS, VPN, DNS, domain management, that kind of stuff. They do all of it. All you've got to do is go to our webpage, click on their logo. It takes you through to their website. And then if you go back to our page and look, you've got the sponsors page. That's got all the codes in it. And it's British Tech, VPS, VPN, DNS, domains, and so on. You type those into your account when you've filled up your basket. Keep it in return until you've got all of your discounts. Then put your payment details in. And we get kudos for having sent you. And they keep us afloat. We've had a really good month, it would seem. From the 16th of June to the 16th of July, we did 745,000 downloads of our podcasts. So that's pretty good. I like that.
And do you know why? That's because they can't send them back.
Once you click that button, you're a hit. You can't even stop it. You can't even cancel our downloads. Once you start, that's it. You switch your device off, so you switch it back on, our download starts again. We want the numbers. If you'd like to sponsor the podcast, you're always welcome to as well. With those kind of numbers, you know, come on. We've got a big reach. But UK2, fantastic. Look after us. We love them. Cheers. Right, here we go. It's that time. Eric's frantically trying to find something on the net while the rest of you are talking, and he's glad he's
No, I have a good one today.
Oh!
It's already in the document. I'm impressed.
James.
Let's see what it is.
What do you have for us, mate?
Well, my kids are on school holidays at the moment, and my son's 13th birthday is quite soon. Unfortunately, the device that he indicated he'd like isn't available yet. But it looks, from the video he showed me, utterly bonkers. It's called Leap Motion, or Leap. And it's basically like 16 times better than the Kinect, $79. And it's basically a piece of hardware that plugs into your PC and detects 3D motion, so you can do with a Kinect, except with many more lines of articulation.
Yeah.
And if you look at the video on leapmotion.com, what it proposes it can do is just bonkers. And I can't see how. I mean, this is people were already talking about the I can never remember the L cars thing, the interface to your PC where you're actually doing the swipes and business. And if this doesn't start that off, I don't know what will. Completely check. It could potentially change the way you interface with your PC because you're not touching it. You're waving in front of it, and it looks brilliant.
Gaming industry's got a lot of good ideas going on at the moment. Some good games out there. If you've not listened to our gamer podcast, then you should. And all of these developments will be read out to you and skirted over the top of by Paul and Savages.
Oh, sorry. So, Paul, have you covered that in the game show?
No, we haven't, actually. Probably primarily because Chiz hadn't read up on it, so we decided not to.
it's not out yet, but and it may just be hype, but what it looks like is pretty epic.
Yeah, you see, this network is not interested in getting the news out first. We're interested in getting it out right. Well done. Well done, Chiz.
Except on the big show.
Don't come on here and bull your way through it. No. Not this network. Mm-mm. Paul, what have you got for us, mate?
I have an application, but it's an HTML5 application, and it's called Sun. And so if you point your iOS, I'm assuming it will work on Android, I'm not sure, but if you definitely on an iPhone, if you point your iOS device at pattern, pattern.dk/sun, and basically what it is, hopefully you can see this here,
right.
It's a weather app, and it's just really nice. You set the location, and you swipe it, and it has these lovely little gestures, It's really nice. And I mean, it is just the weather app, but I just think it's beautiful. And then you tweak and it gives you like a menu that you can then go through and stuff like that. It's absolutely free. It's just an HTML5 thing. You just save it onto your home screen. I just think it's beautiful. And you can save 4 locations in it. So there you go.
Excellent. Very, very good. Free we like.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, what have you got, Mrs.?
Mine is an anti-call thingy.
It's a pass of the week.
That's the one, pass of the week. I don't know if I mentioned a while ago, I was quite excited. I got the latest upgrade of Android for my Nexus S called Jelly Bean, aka 4.1. And it's absolute tosh. It is absolute crap. I am getting sick, tired, and fed up with it. Please, can I have ice cream sandwich back?
No.
Now, I don't know whether it's okay on other devices, but on the Nexus S, it stinks. It absolutely stinks. Google really haven't tested it properly. I've been getting quite angry with it because it's actually stopped me from doing some things on there, and I can actually make it crash at will, which is the point is the fact that I can actually, it's so buggy. There's certain things I can do on it, and I would know. So if Google said to me, what makes it crash? I can say, well, do this and it will crash. So it's that bad, you know.
It's not beta then, is it not?
It sounds like a dog that rolls over for a biscuit.
It's, well, as you describe it, was it a turd?
Come on, boy, come on, boy, crash.
Glitter?
Crash. Come on, boy, crash.
Yeah. So at the moment, it's definitely a turd rolled in glitter.
Oh, dear. Okay.
So that's
terrible image.
I know.
If you Google that term, by the way, you can find pictures of turds rolled in glitter.
I thought you copyrighted that one. It's yours,
No. There is turds rolled in glitter and all sorts.
Don't Google this.
Yeah, Google it. I think you've got to have settings off moderate, but there you go. And last, but my name is least, Mr. Eric Lanigan, with something really good, apparently.
Well, Sarah did an anti-cool thingy, so by the laws of physics, that canceled out my cool thingy, so I'm upset now.
As long as it's not Jelly Bean.
No, we can do passes of the week, that's fine.
No. My cool thing is, well, remember last week I said that since Safari 6 came out, they changed the, not the location, but they changed the mechanism by which you would modify the reader, Safari reader, that page that comes down is, it's like readability or Instapaper, that kind of thing. If you're a Safari user, you're familiar with it, also known as reading list. It summarizes an article and doesn't, or it removes the distractions and shows you the clean text only view. But I like to do a different font. I like Open Sans because it looks better on the MacBook Air. It's sharper, it's easier to read. I can do double spaced, all this stuff. So for a while there, I've been customizing the CSS. I don't really know CSS, but just, you know, guessing, checking my way through it, and a little bit of HTML. And so, but last week I said that since the Safari 6 came out, they broke that again. Well, now I found out, because I did some Googling, it turns out that on the Safari 6 page, it says that a new feature of Safari 6 is that now Safari extensions can be written to customize Safari Reader in an extension. Wasn't allowed before. And there's a whole developer page now about all these, this whole new backdoor API that lets extension builders customize Reader. So from there, I just did a quick search, and this is the first one I found. It's not on the Safari extensions website yet. So far, there haven't been any approved extensions for customizing Reader that I've seen show up on Apple's own site yet. This is an unapproved one, but it works fine. So it's where I ended my search so far. It's called Custom Reader 2 with a Roman numeral 2 for Safari 6. The website is Canis Bos Safari Extensions. I don't even know how that's pronounced, but you can get to it by searching for Custom Reader, one word,
so
Roman numeral 2.
Roman numerals.
Roman numerals too.
Sorry, has it got, you wrote that URL has got Roman numerals in it?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't.
Now, guys, don't take the mic.
Canisboss.com /custom reader. There we go. Thank you. Good pick, sir. Good pick. Someone's typing in it now. Never mind. In the doc. My pick is... I had a bit of a problem last week, if you remember, with flickering lights and that kind of stuff. And it didn't look too bad on the video, finally. And we had dim and that kind of stuff. Now I've got incandescent lights, which has helped no end, which is why there's no flickering. But also, The Logitech C910 has a problem because it's set up to 60 hertz. So it's asynchronous with the electrical supply here in the UK. Therefore, it flickers, unfortunately. But
I said that last week. Oh, I love being right occasionally. Thank
you, sir. Well done. I spoke to Jodamax, and Jodamax said, oh, I've got a friend who's a developer, and he developed a piece of software that you can use. Now, I know it's available for Mac. I think it might be available for PC as well. But it's basically called webcam settings, and that's it. And all it does is let you manually change webcam settings on your webcam that's connected. And you can see there, look, you can change the power line frequency. You can let it do it for you, or you can swap between 50 and 60 hertz. And also you can adjust all of your gain, exposure time, saturation on the image. And you could get an absolutely perfect image. And a lot of stuff you can toggle on and off for auto function, like autofocus, or as it says there, white balance and so on. Fantastic.
See, all you really needed to do was change the mains frequency in your house, and you would have been fine.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and then I went against it. So there we go.
Yeah.
It's £5.49, so it's not the cheapest of applications. But what I can say is it works, and also it's not a pass through. So you're not taking your webcam and passing it to the application. It controls the camera live without interfering with the camera's contact with an application. So. You don't have to have one running first, then the other or anything. You just open it and it actively controls the settings.
Is it available for Linux?
I really doubt that.
Does it work with the FaceTime built-in camera?
Yes, it does. It works with any camera from what I can see. I've got three cameras that I've plugged in. One of them, the Microsoft camera, which is plug and play on OS X. And it works with that as well. So
nice. But does it control webcam settings?
It controls the webcam. Don't you?
I'm still just confused. Does webcam settings control webcam settings? I can't figure out what it does.
You're never coming on.
That's what it's called.
I've had enough of you. You're not coming back. You got next week off, mate.
I'm glad we've had this little chat.
Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hart? Please, sir.
I'm just underneath the Twitters. SYZYGY, pronounced scissor G.
Thank you, mate. Jolly good. Mr. Wheatley, where are you?
You can get me on the web show, iOS show, or gamer show on this network.
And if you haven't listened to those, you bloody should, because I've got to say, mate, gamer particularly is one that I listen to out of choice.
Thank you.
I do enjoy
You're
it.
You're the one.
I'm the one, yeah. I wrote that review. And I've got to say, I get odd comments on Twitter and stuff like that. People love the crap game. You must not stop crap game.
Yeah, yeah.
That
no,
is
superb. Yeah, I have a little bit of a thing to say about that, actually. Sam admitted last week that his crap game review from 2 weeks ago was entirely off of Wikipedia because he hadn't had time to play it.
Good lad. I don't mind cheating.
but yeah, so those three places. Or on Twitter, I'm at Paul Wheatley.
Jolly good. And James, you didn't mute yourself. We heard it. Sarah... Oops. Where are you, Mrs.?
You can also get hold of me on the web show as well, actually. Occasionally, not every show, but quite a few of them. And also coming up very shortly, the F1 show on this, both on this network and also on the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK.
And Mr. Lanigan?
At ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, ericlanigan.
We'll be back again next week, late as normal, due to technical errors through just starting the computer once again after it's been switched off. But it wouldn't be British Tech Network without some cocker, would it? No. See you next week.